Thanks for joining me today for this edition of Simply Business. I'm Baron Gus, and today we're going to discuss the Restaurant Revitalization Fund and its effect on Hawaii businesses. Joining me today is Tom Jones, celebrated restaurateur of Gyotaku Restaurants, and Mark Spain, Regional Director of the Small Business Administration of Hawaii. Mark and Tom, thanks so much for joining me here today. Really exciting to have both of you here. Tom, you and I have a long history. I think we've known each other for 30 years.
We reminisce
about the days of Columbia Inn and you being at the top of the boulevard and slinging hash, as we would say.
Right.
And, you know, it's so wonderful because all of us have such a deep connection to Hawaii. And I can't think of two better people to actually have this dialogue with. Tom, of course, you representing the restaurants of Hawaii. And Mark, you have some deep, rich history in Hawaii as well. And I know you're both really concerned and you want to make sure that Hawaii businesses do get their share of this fund. So with that, Mark, give us an overview of the restaurant fund and top to bottom, how it works, and then we'll dive in from there.
That's great. Well, as I indicated to many on my earlier interviews in this morning's press, that it's a very broad program. It literally spans a huge section of the restaurant, what we'll call the food delivery industry, of which the restaurants, of course, are very crucial. But more importantly, it provides substantial relief. And the way the law is written, you don't have to worry about SAM.gov. You don't have to worry about going through the grant experience that the Shuttered Venue went through a month and a half ago and now has restarted. This program is really designed to reach down to the very basic food delivery needs of the islands. I think it's also important to note that we have, if you have less than 20 entities in a given relationship, you have a $5 million grant per location, up to $10 million for the entire, what we'll call, entity. But if you have greater than 20, or if you're publicly traded, those are the kinds of indications you'll see on the website at restaurant.sba.gov. That'll give you all the information in detail that each of the restaurant owners and or food delivery firms or companies do. They will want to know. They will see it there.
So that's the parameters, the basic parameters of qualification, the entry. Who does this cover? Give us a little bit more. You know, there's a lot of discussion, of course, about when this program is going to actually launch. You've done a press release that talks about Monday at 6 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time. That will open up what I call that window of 1 to 21 days for those people who can get in on the ground floor. What are those businesses that have a priority status?
Those businesses that have a priority status, they will be able to actually register, get a user ID and a password into the system regardless of where they stand in terms of the priority, which of course is women-owned small businesses, veteran-owned businesses, and socially and economically disadvantaged businesses. So right now, the registration process can start then. And then the actual processing of applications will start at 6 a.m. on Monday. Monday is in the 3rd of May.
So Tom, I can't think of anyone, like I mentioned, better qualified to dive in on behalf of the restaurants. So start that conversation with Mark and let's see where we go, because I know you have a lot of your peer group that have a lot of questions, and we'll see what we can get out of Mark in the way of hot information.
The PPP, you know, funds were the original, you know, lifesavers,
right,
you know, that came out to our industry. And it seems that the RRF is kind of designed to like fill in the gaps and catch all of the expenses that might have been missed by, you know, companies that weren't able to either access PPP funds or still had additional expenses that they needed to cover.
Yes, the broad exposed expenses that are eligible is as much as you want to look at your P&L. You have the expenses that go from selling, general and administrative expenses, even those that maybe have been obligated from the past that are now waiting to be resolved. It is very broad in terms of what can be addressed in terms of payment. As you looked at the PPP program, Tom, you looked at it from the standpoint that it had 60% was payroll restriction, and then you had 40% that was non-payroll. Here you have the entire P&L available to you from the expense side of the ledger.
Yeah, I was looking at the application yesterday and the documentation on it. The list of eligible items, expenses, is phenomenal. You know, it's paragraphs of information. I was kind of curious, it might be easier to understand what's not available. So what isn't covered by this?
Well, really, that's a good question. And frankly, there are still deliberations on what may not be covered. What when we say not be covered as far as expenses, I really don't have any specific item that I could call to your attention. There may be some decisions made in that regard, but right now we don't have any specific exclusion other than capital assets that maybe want to be purchased. But when you're talking about just expenses that would go on the P&L for the year, really it's very broad.
Yeah, I looked at the very simple, the application is quite simple actually.
Yes, well it's going to be simple because of the technical assistance that we plan to offer. There's going to be activity actually at the Blaisdell on this coming Monday, the 3rd, very early. It'll be worked on with the city and county. Jill Chapman and I spoke earlier today. We featured her on our resource partner program, and we found that there are willing volunteers to go and provide assistance. It's really crucial that the manual application now is going to be put in a very more structured way on the online portal, which means it has a natural progressive flow to it. But even though sometimes people can be intimidated by something that's purely online, they feel more comfortable handling the paper. That's where our technical assistance teams will be at the Blaisdell, and along with other activities we're going to be working on next Tuesday, the 4th, that will be a all statewide seminar on the application process. I will tell you, we do expect the money in this program of almost $29 billion to be gone in less than 3 weeks. But that's where you as a constituent talk to the Senator Hirono, Senator Schatz, and of course, Congressman Case and Kahele, and say, hey, have your pukas filled by the time this legislation has then been exhausted. Why wait like we did last fall from August to almost December before the PPP became reinstituted? We have a reason now to know that probably four times the amount of the $28 to $29 billion is what's needed to take care of the needs in the country. And some people even ask other questions associated, well, does Hawaii have a certain allocation? It's first come, first serve. And that's why our congressionals have got to be on top of the issue of making sure the replenishment of the fund is done before it expires.
There's certainly been a lot of webinars and, you know, emails about what's, you know, going on and getting information about this. So there's a lot of talk about it. On the application for the preferred status, you know, applicants, it's kind of like an honor system. But there's also language, you know, there that says that, you know, if you're, cheating a little bit or misrepresenting your application, that the consequences could be pretty severe. So how much forgiveness would there be for, you know, honest errors or, unintentional mistakes?
I tell you, the pod that I work with, we have three distinct levels of review for the program starting next Monday. We cover the four Western states. POD is nothing more than a personal order defined approach. We start with the reviewers. All of the eligibility has been determined by the system. In other words, this system compared to others that we have experienced in the past is based on the PPP chassis. But look, we've had nine, almost 10 months of using the PPP. And now the perfection done by the Summit Corporation, they're the data processing professionals, and they have pretty much made this system at the eligibility stage. So when it comes to the manual review, what we used to call loan officers, but it's really reviewers that are saying, yes, everything here is concise, it's complete, documentation uploaded has been properly reflected. It goes to the approver. So we have reviewer, approver, and then the decisioning process is done by the system based upon those two steps.
And they're all in the SBA. There are people
SBA who are contractors, yes.
They're contractors.
Yeah. And largely, they're drawn from the various loan centers. We have a loan center in Fresno, California. We have a loan center in Herndon, Virginia, and Little Rock, Arkansas. So those three loan centers that normally do the normal SBA loans, what we call the 7A, which is the typical business loan, or the one that's involved with real estate, the 504, those are the teammates that we have in each of the pods. And we're not trying to have the whole system be done by one central location. The pods are being done by region. That means we have more of a personal attentiveness to the process of the applicant's need.
Are they geographically siloed, meaning so someone applying from Hawaii most likely will be assigned to a pod in that California, Arizona region?
You're looking at him.
You're it.
I'm the team lead, and then all the staff we have under us with reviewers and the approvers are all from the various loan centers, but they're accountable to the Western U.S.
So the devil's in the details a little bit here, you know, because PPP program, which I'm very intimately familiar with, and this is, you know, I always say everything you want to learn about the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, you can learn right here. But we know this is a little different than what's going to be launched on Monday. Now this program has you submitting things like your income tax return, a comfort letter from a CPA. It seems a little tougher. And so let me give you an example. You have businesses that have not yet filed their 2020 tax return.
Correct.
Would your suggestion be that these businesses do need to scramble and get some form of return up there, even if they amend it later on?
Absolutely would be to their benefit to do so. It can be substantially informative to the reviewer.
Another part of the application, you know, and we're talking, of course, about disadvantaged businesses, socially disadvantaged, economically disadvantaged. The current application does not have, fields, if you will, in it to self-declare that kind of information.
That's correct.
So does the online one have that?
The online will give what we call a demur, because it's been no difficulty at all in dealing with the veteran, the woman-owned small business, or the ethnic minority. But to do the economically disadvantaged is not a simple task. So I hope that that will be clarified. It is a work in progress. Basically, the restaurant.sba.gov website is a continuously updated site. You don't have to worry about going to the primary site. You go to this information-driven site, and it is updated continuously. So at the time that the applicant is doing their application on whatever date, that restaurant.sba.gov website will have it in what is called the Knowledge Bank. The Knowledge Bank is a almost now 91 scenarios on what is being dealt with on the application.
Do you think it'll be a detailed list of, you know, when I delve into this, it starts talking about my net worth being less than $700,000.
Yes.
So people will have to declare in some way, shape, or form, what my residence is worth, I have in my 401k, what I have in my bank account, if you will. Do you think it'll be that detailed, or will it maybe just be a self-declaration, and then later on the SBA may come back and say, hey, we're going to do a spot check audit?
It could be a combination of that. I don't think it'll be as stringent here on the RRF, but it never surprises me that there will be changes, particularly when you have the Office of Inspector General or the General Accounting Office doing second guessing on programs. But right now, it's relatively simple that we're trying to keep the application process. And when it goes online, hopefully that type of disclosure will not be difficult to attain.
Mm-hmm. So I've noticed in the application, there's some provisions being talked about using a point of sale system that many restaurateurs actually have available to them. Explain what that process looks like. Will people actually be able to sign up via their point of sale system? Are there partnerships you've already established and APIs being, this is really interesting to me, and it sounds overly efficient.
I'll use Square. Square, along with others, Toast, of course, being one other, have been really successful in dealing with the documentation. Because the documentation is contained inside the POS system, it will accelerate dramatically the application processing in the overall RRF platform. So in effect, what you have is you have an application on steroids. Mm-hmm. And that means the documentation issue for the applicant will be much more simplified because of using the point of sale system that they have been using as a business.
So the point of sale systems, it sounds a little bit like the PPP in that with HR Symphony, we of course had a formatted package for the application, and those numbers were approved and verified by the lenders, if you will, banks in the case of the PPP.
Right.
So it sounds like you've been working, meaning the SBA, with the point of sale system companies, explaining to them what you would need for reporting purposes. Is the actual application in there as well, or is that separate where they take this packet of data and, you know, adhere it to the application. How's that work?
In the case of the pod that I'm working on for the four Western states, everything is coming through the system at the generation of the applicant. When the applicant uses the POS feature, that means a lot of the activities that I'm involved with will not be impacted. It's going to be going directly into an approval queue that's strictly for POSs. Strictly for POSs. So you have an application by what we'll call the applicant themselves going through the normal SBA portal, and then you have that POS. You, in effect, have parallel delivery for the ultimate award to be made.
Very interesting, this whole system. I really like what you guys have done. I think you learned a lot from the PPP on this one, for sure.
Oh, yes, we did.
There's a lot of restaurants, though, that have legacy, you know, POS systems that aren't, you know, that tuned up, and or, you know, some of the smaller operators, they don't even, you know, really have access to computers and online. Mm-hmm. Is this program 100%, you know, online driven?
That's a good question. On the POSs that are approved and those that have not yet signed up could definitely be a part of that if they're inclined to be a part, like Square and the others that have already indicated their alliance. Mm-hmm. So if the POS system that's used by the restaurant is not within, we'll call the captured group, I would say that then the normal application process was what they want to go through.
If there was a smaller mom and pop restaurant that was, you know, really needed these kind of funds, and I think this is designed to, you know, catch, you know, those funds that drop through
right.
the cracks, who do they turn to if they need some help in actually even, you know, filing online?
Well, in filing online, we're going to have people from our resource partners as well as the city and county for those who want to have online one-on-one assistance, not have to rely on a Q&A session or have to rely on their interpretation of the documents. But the city and county, the key person that's leading that charge is Jill Chapman. And then we're also making sure that goes out to the other city and counties, you know, across the state. But Jill Chapman and her team are leading that charge.
Yeah, many of the HRA members fall into that category.
Yes.
And they're going to need additional kind of help. They're
yeah.
not as sophisticated as the larger companies.
And that was learned. That was learned from the PPP program where there wasn't that close assistance. And so now this more overt assistance. And then coming in the month of May will be a new program that will be somewhat supportive of the RRF. And that's called the Community Navigator Program. And that's where we're going to reach out more into the communities and deep, deep drill downs to help everyone, whether it be a restaurant business or just a business in general coping with the COVID-19 issues. We see this type of commitment coming out of the American Rescue Plan, and it's going to be something that we'll probably work with the Hawaii Restaurant Association. If we get the extension, more funding, we will find that community network will be very helpful, but it could be throughout the community.
Right. Could you talk a little bit about the length of time that these funds can be used for? Because it's very different from the PPP, which had very specific periods, 24 weeks or 8 weeks, and you had to make these decisions and then be very strategic about how you use those funds. But in this particular case with the RRF, there's a lot more flexibility in, you know, when you can actually spend the money, even money that you may not have spent yet.
All the way through March 2023.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's really a great program. As you know, we talk about, you said almost anything can be covered, and we're looking for, well, what can't? But I like the idea that you simply, through the application process, and I think about computation one for those established businesses, that they simply compare their income levels for 2019 versus 20. And whatever that financial deficit is, your program is actually coming in and picking up the differentiation
right.
of their income. But I thought it was a very intelligent way to go about this. It seemed overly simplistic, to be honest with you. It was refreshing to see.
Well, part of it is attributable to certain leaders, Patrick Kelly, who is our chief lending officer, if you will, and has a good banking background and experience, very tech savvy, along with two other colleagues, Jehoon Kim and Martin Andrews. These individuals have worked very closely with the policy decision makers up on the Hill, working with the congressional committee leadership so that we don't have the pukas that happened on some of the original launches. We have to recognize that a year ago when this pandemic came in, that the background and the support of the Small Business Administration was not oriented toward lending. It was oriented toward providing services through the lending community. So when the EIDL loan came out, that was one of the challenges of the EIDL loan. Everything had to go through the Office of Disaster Assistance, which typically took care of hurricanes and took care of tsunamis and took care of tornadoes, but it wasn't designed to do massive lending. So this particular approach, you might say third time is a charm. This is why I think we're going to see great satisfaction with this program. What we need to have from Congress will be sufficient funding to meet the need. And that where it comes from our trade associations, it comes also from our congressional leaders here to take the message back to Washington that this will not be in $29 billion sufficient to meet the need.
Let's talk a little bit about eligibility for a moment, because food service in this day and age, or food delivery, comes in all shapes and forms. And so we have a question from Diana Singh, the Office of Economic Development, County of Kauai. And I think she hits the situation right on the head in that we know that we have certain rules for like brew pubs and those kinds of things. We have that 33% eligibility. But her question is regarding agricultural businesses such as farms. They have food trucks or tasting rooms. Would that make them eligible?
Yes.
And will they run into problems in any way, shape, or form when they try to apply those formulas that we've already laid out?
Well, there's three calculation methods that were originally offered.
Because they could be selling lettuce all the way down the street, but decided to set up their little pitch tent, you know, on the side of the road, which has always been a revenue positive thing for them. And they want to at least get that income back. And they don't know how to justify it or substantiate it.
I will be honest with you. I know I probably can't make a statement that'll be a panacea.
Go ahead and make it. We'll hold you to it.
I will say that if you have this sale to the public and it's a frequent sale, because you're self-certifying, that you sell whatever it is that you bring from your farm, and you sell it maybe at, like in Hawaii Kai, we have a whole area that's set up for the farmer's market. Okay.
Yeah.
But then you have those on Kauai where the farm is 5 to 7 acres, and on the roadside, on the way from Kilauea to Princeville, you have roadside stands that come right off of the farm's property. So as long as they're selling retail, that is going to be a justifiable case to be said that they are eligible.
It's quite an interesting interpretation because my mind starts to wander. Diane starts talking a little bit about honey producers, coffee growers who show up at our neighborhood farmers markets because they're not restaurants.
No.
But it is food and it's consumable. So is it just beg for a little gray area and we're going to err on the side of let's help the world?
Well, it does say this. We have all the applications that are restaurants. Then we have applications that come from food service providers, the trucks, the food carts, the Fort Street Mall enterprises. Then you have inns. You have tasting rooms. When you look at the list that's on restaurant.sba.gov, you'll find that the scope is very broad. And even when you get down for the applicants that are an inn, as I look at the detail here, I was amazed at some of the flexibility that's been put into the language. Heretofore, when we looked at the PPP program and hence the 17 interim final rules, this seems to have a great amount of latitude by its design. And I would say the collaboration between SBA officials and also the legislators, the staffs primarily who helped craft the language, has been a successful one.
Mark, earlier on in our conversation, you talked about Neil Blaisdell Center.
Yes.
And the fact that you're going to be mobilized down there to help businesses who want to walk in and get that help. Tell us what that looks like. I'm really surprised and intrigued about that opportunity for businesses to get the help they need.
It's really a collaboration between the city and county of Honolulu, putting the local flavor to it. The Blaisdell, of course, is a location that's convenient to most. Resource partners will be there from the Veterans Business Outreach Center, for example, the Women's Business Center, our Small Business Development Center colleagues will be there as well to give that up close and personal touch. So when they walk in, they should feel very comfortable. They're not being asked to be tech savvy, pre-qualified. They're being asked to, what do you have? What are your needs? The portal is open. Let's get you into the portal.
And there will be PCs set up, and they'll walk them through that application process, hand-holding?
It's our understanding. It's not our particular gig at this point. We are not the organizer, but what we are is we're helping with the information and the documentation, and we just have to give Jill Chapman kudos for putting the organization together. It's a great local demonstration of the local government taking its charge seriously.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is fantastic.
So this is, of course, a byproduct of the American Rescue Plan,
That's right.
So what have you seen since the announcement? Well, I think it was March 11th was the
Correct.
American Rescue Plan. What have you seen out there in the community that, and more importantly, what have you seen that you didn't expect as a residual effect of the American Rescue Plan?
I think we didn't expect the biggest thing that we were thinking was that SAM.gov would be required as it was for the shuttered venue. The biggest surprise was we found that the legislation was crafted in such a way where it wasn't put under the particular federal accountability regulations that deal with grants. The grant process is very, very structured. Once that application has been submitted, there's no way we can provide advice and counsel. Whereas this particular program said, we don't want to deal with those kinds of limitations. We can provide advice and counsel to the applicant and also provide informational status on how the application is being processed. But I was really surprised that this RRF plan was given greater latitude, greater flexibility, and also it took the consumer's interest at heart as the center. We all try to do that in most of the programs we do, but this one, I think, is, I'll use the term, third time is a charm. EIDL, then PPP, and now this.
What's the expectation, you know, right now in terms of feedback and confirmation about applications and how long that's going to take? Because once you submit it, you know, I did this with PPP or EIDL as well in the mm-hmm. past. You're waiting and you don't yes. know what's happening. And so you're not even sure if your application even went through or not.
Right.
I think we're looking for turnaround time. Yeah, right, we get the money and spend it.
And also, too, communication is important yeah. because when you submit it, you press that button and it goes in and you're like wondering, okay, well, did they get it or not? And, you know, and sometimes there's, you know, a concern or, you know, confusion after that.
I'll use a metaphor. This car will not be a lemon.
Oh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see that the work that's been invested in the platform, the turnaround times are highly, we'll say, truncated. I think that's going to really be, the proof will be in the pudding after this time next week. How I've seen this program come together, it's very synonymous with what I call a good platform. Thumbs up.
So you mentioned earlier the idea that the SBA used to be somewhat of a wholesaler, if you will, doing business through the banks. Today, you're becoming somewhat of a retail, we won't call you a lender, because I think you're giving this money away from what I can
yes.
tell. What do you see down in the future? I mean, I think as much as we're all tearing the masks off our face, business and the economy has yet to really restart. Do you see more programs, more funding, or do you think we have enough programs and all we have to do with Congress is request more funding? If you had your crystal ball, what would you say it looks like in there?
That's a good question. I think what we see really, I'll put it this way. If you look at the restaurant.sba.gov, you'll see the four major chassis right now, which is RRF is the most current. I don't see any more like that coming. What I do see is through the Community Navigator program, a greater outreach to the community where the SBA will become more prominent in getting lending or access to capital into underserved communities that have not seen it before. And I think that's what the Community Navigator program, if you call it a program, no, it is a service outreach program that's designed to bring more people into the community to help those who may not be tech savvy. They may not be involved with detail that runs a business, say, effectively. I'll give you one example. I'm working now with Congressman Case on a program that's going to be earmarked for the next fiscal year, 22, that's going to reach out with a lab that will serve the farming community in the western part of Oahu, mobile as well as fixed. And those programs are going to be the type of programs we see going forward, where we meet needs of underserved. And how we're going to do that is through the Community Navigator program. Because right now, I don't have enough staff. And we have four resource partners right now, the SCORE, the VBOC, the Women's Business Center, and the SBDC. What we'd like to do is see that multiply fourfold. And that means we'll have a hub and spoke type of approach in this Community Navigator program. I feel that's where the SBA's relevance is going to be going forward.
So, Tom, you've been in the restaurant industry, you know, a lot longer than 30 years, but we won't go into it. Your industry's just changed dramatically. Of course, you were all shut down for a while, and you're all, of course, trying to stay open. But now there's definitely a new blueprint for what restaurants look like. From an outside observer, of course, I look at the lease rents you guys were paying and the density of people you would put in a facility. And that's got to change. Financially, the equation changes. What's changing in your industry? What do you see? When do you ever get to the point that you look the way you used to? Are you guys going to be more nimble than ever? What's your crystal ball for your industry?
Well, immediately right now, we're dealing with employment issues because, you know, people are still out on, you know, unemployment or and using the plus up. So that's been a real challenge for us to get everybody back to work. And we're also dealing with supply chain issues right now because, you know, as we're ramping back up and the demand is coming back around, restaurants are really struggling with, you know, being able to get all of our supplies. So mm-hmm. we're dealing with that. But I kind of feel that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, pent up demand. And, you know, as people are getting vaccinated, our restaurants, the Gyotaku restaurants, are we have quite a few seniors, well known for taking care of our senior crowd. And as soon as they started getting vaccinated, they were back in the restaurants. And so my guess is that people will, you know, there's people want to socialize. They want to get back, you know, into the restaurant. So I'm pretty sure that once we get close to herd immunity and that there's going to be and also too, technology is available now too. Restaurants are putting, you know, air purifiers and all that into there. So I think that you're going to see the normal restaurant slowly getting back, but takeout is here to stay. You know, mm-hmm. takeout sales in restaurants has gone up by at least 400% in my restaurant. I think people are getting used to eating out. It's interesting because we have this, you know, this situation where we're trying to cut back on packaging and, you know, mm-hmm. and all of that. And at the same time, there's this huge demand for takeout. So we're going to have to reconcile those type of issues in our industry.
Oh, but interesting.
I think too, employment, you know, taking care of our employees is really key because this, you know, pandemic has pointed out that their health at work and in the workplace is important as well. And so we really had to re-look. It's not just our customers
yeah.
that we need to take care of. We need to take care of the working environment for our employees as well. So it's really changing.
I think
the
your industry's been pretty innovative, actually.
Hugely.
Yeah. One thing that I love is there's always some great restaurant that doesn't take reservations and you have to stand in line. Well, now it's great because some of my favorite restaurants like that, I get to make a reservation, no standing in line. I love it. So that was kind of good that came out of the pandemic.
Yeah, the technology is amazing. You're talking about Toast and mm-hmm. some of these other POS mm-hmm. systems, the online ordering, you're able to make a reservation. You can communicate through texting now. You're in a parking lot. You communicate with the cashier, you know, hands-free. So all these technology things have really, really started to make their way into our business. And those things are here to stay, for sure.
And cross quite a spectrum, too, whether it be Kona Brewing and Kauai Kai or mm-hmm. if it's Roy's Restaurant, the process of access is the same.
Yeah, right.
The adaptability I'm so impressed with.
Yeah.
And you keep feeding us. Just thank you very much.
Yeah, that's what we're here to do. That's the one thing that's so ubiquitous about our business or whatever is people got to eat.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all have to eat.
People
right?
got
to
eat. And so, doctors, chefs, and I think morticians got the market cornered for work around here.
Wonderful. Well, Tom and Mark, thank you so much for joining us here today. I know those viewing this video really appreciate your insights. Come Monday, it's all going to be a lot more clear for all of us. And I know you'll be more than happy to add some further information and comment. But again, what is that website that people can go to?
It's really important. That's where the most current information will be on an ongoing basis. And that is restaurant.sba.gov.
Perfect. Thank you both.
You're most welcome,
Our
sir. Pleasure. Thank you.
Nice talking with you today, Baron.
Thank you, Tom.
Mark.